It is Thursday, June 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, U.S. President Donald Trump condemns the investigation into a possible obstruction of justice. The father of the U.S. student released by North Korea comments on his son's case.
We went for 15 months without a word from or about Otto.
And we meet some unseen managers who keep Broadway shows on track. It's all ahead. U.S. President Donald Trump is assailing reports that the prosecutor investigating Russian meddling in last year's election is now probing whether he tried to obstruct justice in the case. Trump wrote on his Twitter account Thursday, "They made up a phony collusion with the Russian story, found zero proof, so now they go for obstruction of justice on the phony story. Nice." Trump reacted after several news reports late Wednesday said that Special Counsel Robert Mueller plans to interview key U.S. national security officials about Trump's comments in seeking an end to the investigation of contacts his first national security advisor, Michael Flynn, had with Russia's ambassador to Washington. Trump fired Flynn in February after just 24 days on the job when he learned that Flynn had lied to Vice President Mike Pence about his conversations with Sergei Kislyak. I spoke with Fred Wertheimer, president and CEO of Democracy 21, a nonpartisan nonprofit organization which advocates campaign finance reform. I asked him about the seriousness of the obstruction investigation into the Trump White House.
Well, this has been a major development in the investigation. But all signs are that the investigation of whether the president was obstructing justice began even before Mueller was there. The reports indicate that shortly after Comey was fired, an investigation was opened into whether the president had obstructed justice. Now, the president has been attacking the credibility of Mr. Mueller, but I don't think that's going to be a very credible attack. Mr. Mueller has widespread support among Democrats and Republicans alike for his integrity. He's got an impeccable record of public service as a U.S. attorney, as an assistant attorney general of the criminal division in the Justice Department, as the director of the FBI. And I don't think it's going to be helpful to Mr. Trump to be attacking Mr. Mueller. He's obviously playing to his base, but this is not going to sell. The bottom line here is going to be what Mr. Mueller determines based on the facts he develops.
Well, and also Mr. Mueller apparently has been assembling some very prominent legal assistants in this investigation.
Well, he is quickly built what is described as one of the most talented teams for this kind of work that has existed. But the issue here now is that it seems pretty clear that the president is being investigated, and at this point it's nothing more than an investigation to determine whether he engaged in obstruction of justice. That's a very serious development. Last week, President Trump was mulling over whether he could fire Mueller. With this development, if Mr. Trump went ahead and tried to fire Mueller, who is investigating him, that itself could become an obstruction of justice action. So the president is just going to have to get used to living with this while Mr. Mueller conducts his investigation. This could take some time. It's part of a much broader investigation that is going on that will take time, and we'll see where we go from here.
Yeah. Well, particularly potentially firing Mr. Mueller, since following President Trump's firing of FBI Director James Comey, that seemed to heighten the amount of of crisis, really, involving this entire matter.
Well, if he did fire Mr. Mueller, that would create an instant constitutional crisis and a firestorm. But apparently cooler heads prevailed last week, and it's frankly the President Trump's advantage to just let this play out now.
Fred Wertheimer, president and CEO of the nonprofit organization Democracy 21. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So, Andrew, what's happening?
Oh, President Trump is not choosing to just let this go or let this stand. He is speaking out on his preferred communication medium, Twitter. So sending out a series of tweets where he said that it was phony collusion with the Russians. They didn't find any proof of that. So now they're going for obstruction of justice and calling it the single greatest witch hunt in American political history. So a lot of people looking at that tweet in particular, pointing out other instances where maybe there have been people who have gotten a worse deal politically than President Trump is getting now as far as a witch hunt is concerned. But a lot of reaction to these charges and a lot of questions about what the investigators are looking at, where the investigation might go. Still a lot of questions yet to be answered, but they are swirling around social media and people waiting for those answers. And then we have been talking about since yesterday the shooting in Alexandria, Virginia, that has left five people injured, including Congressman Steve Scalise. And we're learning a little more about the shooter, James Hodgkinson. People quickly able to find his social media profiles, and so they were able to see some of the posts that he was making, some of the threats that he's made in the past. I checked earlier today and saw that his Facebook profile has been removed by Facebook, as they've done in the past for people who commit these kind of crimes. They try to scrub their social profiles as quickly as possible. There is a Twitter profile that appears to be linked to James Hodgkinson that is still active. So people looking at those tweets, not much there to look at. I think there's only three or four tweets, but trying to figure out from that little information some of the background. And all of the tributes continuing to pour in on social media for Congressman Scalise and those that are injured. But a lot of talk about a gun debate as well. Some people saying this is the time now to have legislation on gun control. Other people saying it's not appropriate to start talking about this while the congressman is still injured, while others are still recovering so recent after this has happened. But that debate continues on social media.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. President Trump says the congressman shot at the basketball practice is in some trouble. Police in Washington seek the arrest of 14 at the Turkey embassy brawl in Washington. The jury is deadlocked in Bill Cosby's sex assault trial. And the U.S. Senate approves Russia sanctions. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOANews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new U.S. Swiss study suggests tailors and dressmakers and others who make their living with a needle and thread have very sharp 3D or stereoscopic vision. Scientists say stereoscopic vision is the result of the brain interpreting 2D imaging information from each eye, which together provides us with 3D depth perception. Depth perception is what helps us make our way through our three-dimensional world. To reach their findings, the researchers administered computerized perceptual tasks to dressmakers and non-dressmaker volunteers. The research indicated that dressmakers are 80% more accurate than non-dressmakers at computing the distance between themselves and objects they were looking at, and 43% of them were also better at estimating the distance between objects. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we get to meet some Broadway stage managers. An Ohio hospital spokeswoman said Thursday the American college student released by North Korea after 17 months in detention suffered a severe neurological injury. After returning home from North Korea, 22-year-old Otto Warmbier was immediately transported to the University of Cincinnati Medical Center Hospital, where he's in stable condition with his mother by his side. That's according to hospital spokeswoman Kelly Martin. Doctors planned an update later Thursday. Warmbier's parents said their son has been in a coma for more than a year and described his release as a medical evacuation. At a press conference Thursday, Fred Warmbier, Otto's father, said that he did not believe what North Korea said was the cause of their son's condition.
I would like to highlight this morning the bittersweet feeling that my family has. Relief that Otto is now home in the arms of those who love him. And anger that he was so brutally treated for so long. We went for 15 months without a word from or about Otto. It was only a week ago that we were informed that the North Korean government now claims he was in a coma for almost all of that time.
Fred and Cindy Warmbier said they were told their son was given a sleeping pill shortly after his trial last March, and he never woke up. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and Defense Secretary Jim Mattis are to hold meetings with their Chinese counterparts next week in Washington. China is an ally of North Korea. Tufts University Korea analyst Sung-Yung Lee told VOA's Victor Beatty he's skeptical of Chinese cooperation.
Over the past 20 years, various U.S. administrations have reached out to China and used basically just moral suasion. Please do the right thing. China, you are a responsible stakeholder. That was a jargon under the Bush administration. And President Obama did no better than the previous administration, sent the Secretary of State, Kerry, several times to China. But that kind of exhortation, or even a bit of a warning, as the latest message out of Washington seems to be, doesn't really produce anything. To tell the Chinese, please do the right thing, otherwise we might do this, we might sanction Chinese entities, pretty much falls on deaf ears. You have to do it. You have to inflict financial losses, costs on Chinese state-owned enterprises and banks for the Chinese to be responsive.
Mr. Tillerson in his testimony also said the administration is mulling whether to impose a ban on all American travel to North Korea, given the recent developments with regard to the University of Virginia student Otto Warmbier.
Well, I think it's about time, actually. You know, personally speaking, I don't have much objection to various scholars, even students and ordinary tourists going to North Korea out of curiosity. Yes, you end up abetting. You end up putting money in the state coffers, but it's a small sum of money. And if you're able to do the right thing upon return to the U.S., telling the world about what a sham, Potemkin politicized front that the capital city is, how the North Koreans mistreat their own people and try to manipulate and deceive outsiders, fine. But the reality is, like Mr. Warmbier, like others, three other U.S. citizens still detained in North Korea, six South Korean citizens still detained in North Korea. North Korea just arbitrarily detains these people and mistreats them, often torturing them. So I think we have to take some measures and perhaps exclude NGOs providing humanitarian aid to North Korea from the travel ban, but there needs to be sort of a general travel ban for ordinary U.S. citizens.
Sung-Yung Lee said if Warmbier was tortured while in captivity, it should come as no surprise. He recalled the sexual torture of Christian missionary Robert Park in 2009 and the brutal 11-month treatment of 82 Navy personnel of the spy ship USS Pueblo, captured in January 1968. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world, and you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. Broadway's highest honor, the Tony Awards, were presented recently in New York. The big winner was Dear Evan Hansen, about a lonely high school student who pretends to have been a friend of a classmate who committed suicide. It took home 6 awards, including Best Musical, Best Leading Actor, and Featured Actress in a Musical. Recognition also went to a lot of people who work behind the scenes, writers, directors, and designers. But there are some just as important who were not even eligible, like stage managers. Jeff London talked to some of them about what they do.
They're usually in the wings, sitting at a desk covered with video monitors and lots of buttons and switches. And they're wearing a headset to communicate with the cast and crew.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back from dinner. The call is half hour. Half hour, please. This is your half hour call.
There's a reason the stage manager speaks into what's called the God mic. Ira Mont has it now at CATS.
I like to think of a stage manager as the chief operations officer of the corporation that is the show.
Donald Freed is behind the God mic for the Tony-nominated play Sweat.
I also like to think of the stage manager as the captain of the Enterprise.
And Karen Meek is production stage manager for another Tony-nominated work, the musical Natasha, Pierre, and the Great Comet of 1812.
I would call us the hub of the wheel. We are the person in charge of communication across all departments and also management and to the cast as well. During the show, we are in charge of making sure the lights happen, the set moves, sound happens, all the things. We are the person who's controlling all of that, as well as somebody who's backstage supervising the crew. So it is a multifaceted, multi-layered job and sort of a jack of all trades.
Long before a show starts its run, the stage manager is an integral part of the rehearsal process, says Donald Freed, in this case with Lynn Nottage's Sweat.
Everything begins and ends with the script. I got to read the script, read it several times, once just to read it as a person, not as a stage manager or an artist or anything, just to have an initial emotional feeling for it. Then I go back in and I read Lynn's stage directions so that I know what's happening light-wise, how she envisions the props, how she envisions the set moving, people entering and exiting, whether or not they're changing costumes.
Once a show is up and running, Karen Meek says stage managers and their teams put in long hours.
Well, my day started today at 9:30 with cast beginning to tell me that they were going to be in or out of the show based on injuries or sicknesses or things like that. And then we have a matinee or rehearsal ends at about 5, 5:30, have a dinner break, and then come back and do it again.
In the half hour before each performance, the stage manager walks through a beehive of activity, making sure everyone's ready for curtain.
5 minutes to the top of the show. 5 minutes, please.
Karen Meek climbs a ladder to her perch high above stage left at Great Comet. Actors perform throughout the theater, and Meek can keep an eye on them all. Once the show starts, she follows a musical score with post-it notes showing all of the lighting and tech cues.
And LX 13, go.
Through one of her video monitors, she can see Josh Groban, who plays Pierre, standing at the back of the stage.
Warning on the chains, warning on the deck, 115 on red, 120 on green.
And by the time the opening number really gets going, Meek is calling cues to the lighting technician every other beat to make sure pin spots come up on cast members all over the stage.
Go, 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 LX 68, go.
Meek literally calls hundreds of sound and tech cues for each performance.
That's the end of the act.
All the stage managers I spoke with started out doing other things. Karen Meek was a costume designer, Donald Freed a dancer, Ira Mont an actor. So he was used to getting applause. Even though he doesn't get any now, he wouldn't want to do anything else.
I don't expect or look for praise or acknowledgement. I am here to support the shows I work on and the actors who do them, and that's what gives me the joy. And I'm very fortunate to have had a 30-year career in a profession that is not easy to get into and is not easy to stay in. I'm a lucky guy.
And Broadway is lucky to have their dedicated stage managers, Tony or not. For VOA News, I'm Jeff London in New York.
The world of Broadway stage managers. And that is our show for today. Please remember to visit our website. You can get to it at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
Under its Rewards for Justice program, the U.S. State Department has announced it is increasing to $25 million its reward offer for information leading to the location, arrest, or conviction of ISIL leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, also known as Ibrahim Awad Ibrahim Ali al-Badri and Abu Dua. Al-Baghdadi is the senior leader of the terrorist organization, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, also known as ISIL or Daesh. Protecting the homeland and the American people is the top counterterrorism priority for the United States. Just as military efforts have been intensified against ISIL, the United States is increasing the means available to gain information on ISIL leadership and bring them to justice. In June 2014, ISIL seized control of portions of Syria and Iraq, self-declared a so-called Islamic caliphate, and named al-Baghdadi as caliph. In recent years, ISIL has gained the allegiance of jihadist groups and radicalized individuals around the world, and has inspired terrorist attacks in the United States. Under al-Baghdadi, ISIL has been responsible for the deaths of thousands of civilians in the Middle East, including the brutal murder of numerous civilian hostages from Japan, the United Kingdom, and the United States. The group also has enabled or directed terrorist attacks beyond the borders of its self-declared caliphate. In 2011, the United States named Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi a specially designated global terrorist under Executive Order 13224. He was also sanctioned by the United Nations Security Council, ISIL Al-Qaeda Sanctions Committee. At that time, al-Baghdadi was the leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq, which ultimately morphed into ISIL. If you have information on Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, contact the Rewards for Justice Office via email at no2daesh@rewards4justice.co, by phone at 1-800-877-3927, or by mail at Rewards for Justice, Washington, D.C., 20520-0303, USA. All information will be kept strictly confidential. Since its inception in 1984, the Rewards for Justice program has paid in excess of $125 million to more than 80 people who provided actionable information that helped bring terrorists to justice or prevented acts of international terrorism worldwide. You can follow the Rewards for Justice program on Twitter at twitter.com/rewards4justice.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.